We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to this March 11, 2019 edition of Hurricane Hotline. Greg Likens here in for Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey Jr. Joe Z is in Charlotte, getting ready to call the men's basketball team's first-round contest in the ACC tournament. They face off against Wake Forest tomorrow at noon, and you can hear that game right here on 560 WQAM. We've got an exciting show for you this evening. Coming up in an hour from now, we're going to have the head baseball coach, Gino DeMare, join the program and talk about his successful 12-3 start for the team this season. Also in the 7 o'clock hour, head men's tennis coach, Alosha Purich, will join the program as we look forward to catching up with him. Coming off a sweep yesterday of the Florida State Seminoles, always good when you can beat FSU. And later in the 7 o'clock hour, head women's basketball coach Katie Meyer will join the program as she's getting ready for the NCAA tournament. But this hour is going to be dedicated to the men's basketball team. As I mentioned, Joe Zagacki in Charlotte, he had a chance to catch up with Coach Larrañaga. Here is their conversation.
We're in Charlotte, North Carolina for the ACC tournament, the 66th annual ACC tournament. Time now for the Hurricane Hotline with Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga on the eve of Miami playing Wake Forest. 12 o'clock tip-off, and we'll be on the air at 11:30 for the Canes and the Demon Deacons. It's a third time you're going to see these guys, Coach, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But first, how about the ACC tournament in general, the rich history of the ACC tournament? You've been a part of it in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, Joe, actually dating back to my high school days, I grew up in the Bronx, went to high school at Archbishop Molloy in Queens, New York, played for Jack Curran, a legendary coach at Archbishop Molloy. And when I played for Coach Curran, he always talked about the ACC. I started watching ACC basketball, primarily because of Frank McGuire, who at that time was the head coach of the University of North Carolina. And Coach McGuire had been my high school coach's college coach in both baseball and basketball at St. John's University. And then Coach McGuire left St. John's, took over North Carolina, won the national championship in 1957, actually recruited a player by the name of Billy Lawrence out of Archbishop Molloy. And then when I got to Molloy and played for Coach Curran, I became a huge ACC North Carolina fan. And one of my goals, Joe, in once I got into coaching, was to be a head coach in the ACC. And I never thought it was going to materialize. I didn't get my shot until I was 62 years old and the University of Miami called me. And it's been a great ride for the last 8 years.
Well, you won the darn thing in your second year in Miami. That's a pretty good achievement.
That was a very exciting year. We had a lot of good players who played very well together. We were led by a sophomore named Shane Larkin, who would go on and be an NBA first-round draft pick. The expression two and done. He played 2 years of college basketball. Then his college career was over, became an NBA player. He was joined in the starting lineup by Duran Scott, one of the great competitors in the ACC. We had Kenny Kaji, Trey McKinney-Jones, Reggie Johnson, and Julian Gamble, a young man that tore up his knee and had a red shirt in his junior year. And again, he got hurt and came back for his sixth season and helped us win that first ACC championship. So that was quite a run in 2012-2013.
Julian Gamble just had a baby, so congratulations to Julian Gamble. There was a time, it's hard to believe, but if you didn't win the ACC tournament, you didn't go to the NCAA tournament, and you were talking about Carolina and North Carolina State and Maryland at the time in Virginia that had some of the all-time great players.
It really unbelievable how many NBA players there were. When I first got to the ACC as an assistant coach under Terry Holland at the University of Virginia, it was 1979, and we had a great incoming class, featuring Ralph Sampson, who eventually would become the three-time National Player of the Year, lead Virginia to, I believe, three straight regular season titles. We never won the ACC tournament, but in 1981, we reached the Final Four. And you know who we lost to?
Carolina, Michael Jordan.
North Carolina with Al Wood. It was the next year that we played North Carolina, and we had some great battles with them, with Maryland, Lefty Driesell, Albert King, eventually Len Bias, before he unfortunately passed away. NC State had, when I first got in the league, a player by the name of Hawkeye Whitney out of DeMatha High School, the same league that has produced Chris Likes. Then they had Sidney Lowe and Derek Wittenberg, both from DeMatha, to play alongside of Thurl Bailey, Cosell McQueen, and Lorenzo Charles. And they beat our Virginia team, not only to get to the Final Four, but to win the national championship.
I always thought Hawkeye Whitney was one of the great names in college basketball. Your team this year, you got Wake Forest coming up. It'll be the third time that you're going to play against them. I thought you had a great line with your team. You said, okay, we have to kind of distill this thing down. You had five games if you're going to survive in advance. We said 2 hours, one game. 2 hours, one team.
And when we played Wake Forest the first time, we were able to beat them at home. When we played them at Wake Forest, we actually played a terrific game for 38 minutes. But we just came unglued and started to rush in the last 2 minutes. They outscored us 16-5. Never had a team give up 16 points in the last 2 minutes. And we end up losing by 1 point. They have Brandon Childress, whose dad, Randolph Childress, kind of owned the ACC in 1996, along with Tim Duncan. Randolph led Wake Forest to the NCAA tournament. And his son, Brandon, very much like Randolph, an outstanding offensive player. He's got some nice help around him, especially Jalen Horde, who's probably a one-and-done, averaging 16-8, terrific freshman. He's probably going to be on the all-freshman team, along with the great players at Duke and Kobe White at Carolina. So Wake Forest is a very talented offensive team. Their head coach, Danny Manning, was a phenomenal college player, led Kansas to the national championship, was the first player chosen in the NBA draft, played a dozen years or more in the NBA, and now he has his team playing great offense. They just lost the other day to Duke by 1 point at Cameron Indoor Stadium, so they're playing at a high level right now.
Yeah, had the last shot, had an opportunity. Childress had the shot. Chandi Brown had the putback with about a second to go. We'll have Miami and Wake Forest coming up for you tomorrow. It'll be a 12 o'clock tip-off, and we'll be on the air at 11:30 for Miami and Wake Forest here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Coach, how about your team this year, the way they battled? Been unusual circumstances for you, and you've really had to battle all year.
Well, by the time the season really got underway, Joe, we were down to seven guys. And what I think it's very difficult for a fan to kind of understand what that means, because a lot of games you only play seven or eight guys, so it doesn't seem that bad. But the thing that has made us so good over the last 8 years, and how good have we been? Well, last year we got the double bye. We were seeded third in the ACC tournament. We've been to the Sweet 16 twice. We went to the NCAA tournament three straight years. That's been unheard of in Miami history. But when you only have seven guys, the practice and preparation, the whole key to success, is so difficult. Our practices now are basically walkthroughs because we can't afford to get anybody hurt. We can't really have good scrimmages. We can't really condition them, because you're afraid of pulling a hamstring. Just this last week, after our last game, in the training room was Buka Zundu taking care of his back, DJ Vasilovich, his ankle, Chris Likes, he fell on his tailbone and had a badly bruised tailbone. We had Zach Johnson in there taking care of the knee that has been problematic for him all season long. So if you push them hard in practice, all you're going to end up with fewer guys. The day before our Carolina game, a game at Carolina where we played extremely well, we didn't even anticipate having Zach Johnson because he sprained his ankle on that Friday, and we had to stop practice before we got anybody else hurt. It was miraculous that not only did he play, but played 35 minutes and played well on a severely sprained ankle. But our trainer, Javier Jimenez, he treated him for 24 straight hours, got that ankle swelling out of there, was able to tape him up, and Zach was able to go. But we're like the walking wounded. It's not just seven guys, but it's trying to manage their time because each of them is playing 30 minutes or more. And we're the only Power 5 team in the country, Joe, with five guys averaging double figures.
How has it been from a strategic standpoint? Because you've had many different lineups to use throughout. And it kind of reminds me of a story with Don Shula way back when Coach Shula had Dan Marino as his quarterback. And then he lost him, and then he went to Scott Mitchell. Then he lost him. Then he brought his third-string quarterback. Then he lost him. He brought in a fourth-string quarterback. And he kept saying, well, it's kind of inspiring to try to figure the puzzle out. But after a while, it's got to be difficult to find the answers.
Well, the challenges for us is how do we get the players to know how to play multiple positions? Someone like Anthony Lawrence has played the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Chris Likes has played the 1 and 2. Zach Johnson has played the 1, 2, 3. DJ Vasilovich has played the 1, 2, 3. Anthony Mack has played the 2 and 3 and 4. Sam Wardenberg has played the 4 and 5. And the only guy that doesn't play multiple positions is Abuka Hizundu. So what ends up happening, and then that's why I say the preparation is so difficult, because you can't cover everything in practice if you have guys guarding multiple guys. So when we're going through our defensive matchups and Anthony Lawrence is starting at the four, guarding the four, and the four does a certain thing. But then after a few minutes, okay, Anthony Lawrence, you got to switch and go to the three man and guard the three. Well, the three man does nothing like the four. Right? He's on the perimeter. He's shooting threes. He's not posting up. And can you imagine if in football today that players had to play both offense and defense, how difficult it would be for them to physically and mentally accomplish it? And that's what it's been like all season long for us, and for our guys.
This is the first time you've had to play on Tuesday at the ACC tournament. Generally, you've either had the double bye or played on Wednesday. So unusual circumstances again for you in terms of getting a team through the ACC tournament.
Yeah, that is unusual. And we told our team, now we got to take it one game at a time, and it's survive in advance, lose and go home. And we'd have to win to get to the NCAA tournament. We have to win the ACC tournament. That means win five games in a row with seven guys. That's a challenge.
Might be the greatest story ever told if you accomplish it.
Well, I would say it would be miraculous if we can come home and be the team cutting down the nets on Saturday. But the thing about our program is we're going to be able to bounce back next year. We've got a good core of players returning. We've got some good guys coming in. We've got a couple of good guys sitting out. So our fan base has been terrific. You know, we were at three straight sellout seasons. We're quite sold out this year, but close. Hopefully we'll be back having sellout crowds again next year and in years to come.
Yeah, because next year we're going to talk about this the schedule, and we're going to talk about this a little bit later, but next year you jump right into it with ACC play right off the bat. So that'll be great for the fans.
Well, the first game will be in November. We don't know if we'll play on the first day. I think the first date is like a Tuesday. We might play that Tuesday or a Wednesday. But once we jump to 20 games, which begins next season, they'll have to get a game in November and another one in December.
Okay, when we come back, we're going to talk about recruiting, how Coach L goes after the recruits and what he looks for. We'll do that as we continue on the Hurricane Hotline right here on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
This is Hurricane Hotline on AM 560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, back to Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
Ready for the 66th annual ACC tournament with University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. We are in Charlotte, and tomorrow it'll be Miami and Wake Forest. The tip-off's at 12 o'clock, and we'll be on the air at 11:30. Miami playing on Tuesday this year, so we'll be on the air tomorrow morning at 11:30, 12 o'clock tip-off for Miami and Wake Forest. Coach, we were talking about putting together your roster for next year, and you have some spots open. Do you look at the players that you want to come in, trying to match them with some of the skills of guys that are here? For example, you have Chris Likes. And last year you talked about a lot. You had great wing players in Brown and Lonnie Walker, and that allowed maybe a little more freedom for Chris. You have to look at the players you have here. I'm not just saying Chris or whoever, to see how it all blends together, or does it just talent override everything?
Well, it's both. And in fact, there's so many factors. One of the expressions that coaches use when evaluating is they ask themselves the question, is this kid high maintenance, low maintenance, or no maintenance? So what does the term mean? A DJ Vasiljevic is a no maintenance. Highly disciplined, terrific student, works hard, always on time, does everything that you would ask a player to do without any hesitation. Most of our players are no maintenance. We have a few that are low maintenance. Low maintenance means that they might need some reminders about what to do and when to do it. For example, if you board go to the airport to board a flight, you better have your picture ID. We know the guys that will forget their IDs, and when they arrive, they say, "Oh, I forgot that." So when you have guys like we have who are solid students, who are hard workers, who are self-disciplined, you can build a very solid program. There are a lot of coaches that don't have that philosophy. They don't care if a kid is high maintenance. They just want the talent, the physical talent. They want great athletes, skilled players who just can ball once they get on the court. But the issues they might have with them off the court, the disciplinary problems, because maybe they're late, maybe they get themselves in trouble off the court or in the dormitory, in their apartment, in the community. Those guys are, for me, really hard to deal with, and so we avoid them at all costs. Second is we want guys who fit well with each other. So yes, we're looking at guys who will play well with Chris Likes, who will blend well with him, complement him, and that Chris will complement them. So Lonnie Walker and Bruce Brown were two guys that were ideally suited to play with a Chris Likes because they had size and length and athletic ability and skill so that Chris didn't have to do too much. DJ Vasiljevic is an absolutely terrific shooter and a very good basketball player, but he and Chris are both very small. So when we play against a guard that's 6'5 or 6'6, which one guards that guy? The matchups become more difficult. And in college basketball today, just like in the NBA, there's a lot of positionless basketball where you have to play like multiple positions. You're not just a point guard or a two guard. You got to be able to play the 1, 2, 3, or 4. And Anthony Lawrence is a prime example for us of a guy we utilize in so many different ways. But the bottom line is when you put together a team, you have to have guys who can really defend. You have to have at least several guys who can really rebound at both ends of the court now. You got to have guys who can really defensive rebound. You got to have maybe some other guys that can offensive rebound. But you got to have rebounders because rebounding is a key component with success. And then lastly, you have to have guys who can shoot and put the ball in the basket. Whether it's twos or threes, Buka Zundu can put the ball in the basket. Jump hook, rebound, score the ball, dunk the ball, catch a lob, throw it down. That's one way of scoring it. But then you have to have guys like Chris Likes who can hit threes, DJ who can hit threes, Anthony Lawrence who can drive. You have to have a combination of skills.
So your profile is more on the combination of skills. Some guys profile and say, well, I'm only going to take a guard that's 6'1", 6'2", and above, or power forward that's 6'9", and above. Your profile is just on those specific, on other skills.
Yeah, I would say Syracuse is the prime example of a coach, Jim Boeheim, who is the second winningest coach in college basketball history, and he has dedicated his program to the 2-3 zone defensively. He does not want smaller guards. He wants guys who are 6'5 and above playing at the 1 and 2. He wants guys 6'7 or 8 above playing at the forward spots, preferably closer to 6'10. And he wants a center who's 6'10 to 7'2 or 3. And he's got it. He's got a lot of big guys, a lot of size throughout his lineup, including his own son, who really hurt us when we played them. On the other hand, there are our coaches, and I would say in Duke's case, they just want the best player. They don't care if it's Marvin Bagley, who's 6'10", or Zion Williamson, who's 6'7". They're both power forwards. They're both tremendous players, both McDonald's All-Americans. They're both one-and-dones, first-round draft choices, and it's a super talented kid.
You've done this both ways. You've had experienced teams where you've used the graduate transfer and parked them and become a very older team. You've had one-and-done and two-and-done players. Going forward, it looks like it's almost going to be a combination where you now have some guys like Cam McGusty sitting out, Rodney Miller redshirting, but also still recruiting at a pretty high level.
If you look at our step-by-step process of building the program, some of it by plan, trying to execute the plan, some of it just almost by accident that we couldn't plan for, but it worked out well for us. So the first was transfer students. We've been very successful recruiting transfers. My staff and I, when we first got here, saw that a transfer like Kenny Kaji, Malcolm Grant, Trey McKinney Jones were all going to be very, very successful players because they transferred in, sat out a year, got used to the program, got used to the ACC, and now we're 21, 22 years old. They were older players, veteran players, and we could enjoy success with them. Then came along a transfer like Angel Rodriguez and Sheldon McClellan, so that when they became eligible, their junior and senior year, we have terrific seasons and end up in the Sweet 16. Why? Because those guys, 22 years old with a lot of experience and a lot of skill as well. Now we have a transfer like a Cam McGusty, who I think is going to be a tremendous help. We have Rodney Miller, who redshirted. We'll have DJ Vasilevich, who's going to be a fourth-year guy. So all of a sudden now we're back being old. We're going to have four or five guys that are 22 years old or above. Rodney Miller is an example of a young man that went to prep school. So he was a year older in his freshman year. Now we redshirt him. Now he's 2 years older than the average senior. So it's very, very helpful to be older. But it's not that we only want transfers. We love recruiting high school players and helping them develop. Guys like Davon Reed, who came in, ranked 166 coming out of high school, and then end up a second-round draft choice and playing in the NBA for the Indiana Pacers. So you got to have young players that develop. You got to have older guys, however they get older, like they stay in the program for 4 years or they transfer in, sit out, now they're older to begin with. But we're in pretty good shape. We should be a much more competitive team next season if everything falls into place. But we still have some big holes to fill.
By the way, before we go for this segment, one more question, this segment, more of a comment. DJ, about 2 weeks ago, took his test for graduate school. International business and entrepreneurship is what he's going to continue to study. And he's bashfully said, yeah, I did okay. The truth is he crushed it. He killed the test.
Well, you know, DJ, as I told you, is a very self-sufficient individual. And he's a smart student. He's a smart basketball player. He's a smart individual. He makes a lot of good decisions. How about this, Joe? This blows my mind about DJ. He had a stress fracture in his foot. All of our doctors told him you need surgery to correct that. They got to put a pin in it for in order for it to heal properly. He said no. He said, I want it to heal naturally, however long it takes. And they said, do you realize that it might not heal that way? And he listened to himself. He got himself in a cast or a boot, whatever the doctors recommended. And by the time school began, that foot was healed to the point that the doctors were saying, that's going to now be a new strategy, a new medical process. Instead of surgery, we're going to put the kid in a boot and have it on an angle where the stress fracture will heal. Mother Nature will take care of it. Wow. And DJ now has played every single game. He's averaging over 30 minutes a game, and that foot has never bothered him again.
All right, when we come back, we're going to talk about Wake Forest, the opponent tomorrow, and also we'll take a look at this ACC tournament a little bit. The top four seeds, Virginia, Carolina, Florida State, and Duke, and we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back for our final segment of the Hurricane Hotline from Charlotte with Hurricanes head coach Jim Larrañaga right after this.
And Kobe White from Carolina, he's averaging like six, almost a double-double, 16 and 8. Danny Manning, their head coach, has instituted a style that we're going to really have to get back defensively if we're going to defend them properly.
Shondi Brown has also been a handful for you in the first two matchups.
Yeah, Shondi Brown is from Florida.
Yeah.
And he's a terrific athlete. He can shoot the three. He buried a huge three in our last game at Wake Forest. He gets to the offensive boards very well, and he's a tough matchup. We don't have anybody his size. He's probably got 3 or 4 inches on our perimeter players. He's about Anthony Lawrence's size, but Anthony Lawrence has to go and guard Jalen Horde, who's a couple of inches bigger than Amp. So Wake Forest is a tough matchup for us. Two very interesting games. We won at home. They won at their place, and this is the rubber match.
In the last game, Chris Likes hit him for 25, 26 points. He hit 5 or 6 3-pointers in that game, I think 5 in a row. What do you anticipate them trying to do with Chris to neutralize him in this matchup?
Well, what they did in the second half of the game is they started playing bigger players on him, like Wright, who's about 6'5", 6'6", and very long and athletic. And that slowed Chris down a little bit, but he got to the foul line and distributed the ball. I thought he had a terrific game.
You did a really good job. I thought rebound, you emphasized that they're a great offensive rebounding team. And I thought your guys in that last game at Wake Forest were very alert and attentive to that part of the game.
Well, overall, I thought we played a very good game for 38 minutes. The last 2 minutes, we, for some reason, got into a very serious rush. Very uncharacteristically, just started taking quicker shots, not defending at all. Wake Forest was able to score 16 points in the last 2 minutes of the game. Unheard of. You know, that's like a team scoring 340 minutes. So we need to do a better job.
All right, how about the rest of this tournament? You take a look at what's here. The top four teams are Virginia and Carolina, Duke, and Florida State. Those are the top four. Florida State's won 12 of their last 13 games.
Yeah, when we played Florida State the very first time at their place and we were looking at video on them, I had said a year ago that I thought this was Leonard Hamilton's best team. And then having played them and watched them early in the season, I said, this could be even better than last year's team. And I think it is. The way Cabin Jelly is playing, the way Terrence Mann is playing, the balance in their offense, the length of their defense, I think they're a real threat to go very far in the ACC tournament and in the NCAA tournament.
Carolina beat Duke twice this year. I thought Carolina was probably the best team we saw, though Duke was very good the day that we played them. Zion Williamson didn't play in either of those games, but Carolina looks like they could be a very dangerous, not only ACC tournament team, but also during the NCAA tournament.
Well, Roy Williams does a great job, and Kobe White, their outstanding point guard, 6'5", can handle, can shoot it. He's a terrific athlete with a lot of speed. He really makes the Tar Heels go, and he has outstanding receivers for his passes. So you have Luke May, who's the preseason ACC Player of the Year. You got Cam Johnson, who's certainly going to be first-team All-ACC at the end here. He's got Kenny Williams, who's likely to be on the all-defensive team. And then Garrison Brooks inside gives them a target inside, a guy who can catch lobs, who blocks shots and rebounds. And then they've got a really terrific bench with Nasir Little kind of headlining the bench. Against Duke the other day, he had 9 points in the first half. He was really a key contributor. But Seventh Woods is a very good player, Brandon Robinson. So Carolina has all the ingredients to go back to the Final Four.
Virginia last year got knocked out in the first round. Everybody is remembering that. They also didn't have Hunter, who is a heck of a player, and probably on the all-conference. And what do you see in Virginia's future in this postseason?
Well, last year's Virginia team was very dominating in the ACC. And then in the NCAA tournament, without DeAndre Hunter, they just weren't quite as good offensively. They didn't score the ball as well. And they ran into a team that was so loose, that had felt no pressure at all, would launch any kind of shot, and ended up making it. One of the things about the matchups in the first couple of rounds is you often find the big and more powerful teams from the ACC playing against smaller, quicker players. And if they find a mismatch that they like, it might be a 6'1 guard who's being guarded by a 6'8 forward just because of the size of their personnel, and they're able to take advantage of it. And that's what UMBC was able to do. They had very small, quick players who could get by the Virginia front line. But Virginia this year has so much more versatility. They still have the size and Jack Salt and Diakite up front. They're 6'10 and 7 feet. But the key to their team is they've got DeAndre Hunter back, having a great season, all-conference player. Braxton Key, a transfer who became eligible right away. Their guards of Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy are joined by Clark, who's about 5'10 and really, really quick and can match up with those little guys. So I think at this point, not only do I think Virginia will get to the Final Four in the NCAA tournament, I think they have a legitimate chance of cutting down the nets and winning the national championship this year.
We probably will have at least one more show to go, and maybe this is a topic for next week, but if you could just touch on it quickly. Do you like this new evaluation system? The RPI has been replaced by the quadrant system. You're a guy of numbers. Do you like the way they're evaluating teams now?
You know, I don't know yet. You got to wait till Selection Sunday to see which one of those bubble teams and what the rationale is for inviting one team rather than another. I know this, my staff and I are spending a great deal of time talking about our schedule for next year, and I've instructed Adam Fisher, who's the scheduling coordinator, to hold off on our last few games to see what the NCAA selection committee does. Is strength of schedule even going to be a factor now? Because our strength of schedule improves in conference because we've just added two more conference games for next season. Instead of playing 18 conference games, we're going to play 20. So in the last 8 years since I joined the ACC in 2011, we've gone from 16 conference games to 18, and next season we'll begin 20.
I thought going from 16 to 18, it sounds easy, but those two extra games, I thought the first 2 years of the extra games were very, very hard, very difficult. Now it's going to go two more. I guess they're going to spread them out from the beginning of the season, play one in November and one in December. But nonetheless, I think that makes it very, very, very challenging.
It sure does, Joe. And part of the reason is, you know, you're playing against a quadrant one team most nights. You know, the reason guys are quadrant two because they lost to the quadrant ones. So if you're losing to Virginia, you're losing to Carolina, you're losing to Duke, you're dropping in the standings. it's very hard to have as many teams as we do stay in quadrant one. But right now you have Virginia, Carolina, Duke, Florida State, Virginia Tech. They're all in the top 15 teams in the country, you know, and that's the teams you're playing night in and night out.
All right, Coach, we got Wake Forest tomorrow, and when you get past that one, then it's Virginia Tech for a third time. That's what's on the horizon.
Thanks, Joe. Looking forward to it.
All right, that's University of Miami head coach Jim Larrañaga. We'll continue on the Hurricane Hotline. Hour number two is coming up right around the corner on Miami Sports Radio 560 WQAM.
It's Hurricane Hotline on the home of the U, AM 560 and FM 96.5 HD2, WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, here's Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Hurricanes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome back here to Hurricane Hotline, and welcome to this March 11, 2019 edition of the program. Hour number two, Greg Likens in for Joe Zagacki and Don Bailey Jr. As Joe Z, you heard last hour with Coach Larrañaga in Charlotte getting ready to call the men's basketball team's first round contest in the ACC tournament as they face off against Wake Forest tomorrow at noon. You can hear all of the action right here on 560 WQAM. If they can win that game, then they will advance to take on the fifth seed in the next round, Virginia Tech, at 2 p.m. on Wednesday. We've got a busy 7 o'clock hour coming up for you. As at the tail end of the hour, head women's basketball coach Katie Meyer will join the program. We've got head men's tennis coach Alosha Puric joining us next segment. But right now we've got a treat as coming off a great victory over the weekend, taking 2 of 3 from Georgia Tech. We've got Gino Damari, Miami Hurricanes head baseball coach, joining us here on Hurricane Hotline. Coach, thanks for joining the program. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing good. Thank you. How you doing?
I'm doing great, and congratulations on taking 2 of 3 from Georgia Tech this weekend. How important was it for you and the team to get off to a strong start in ACC play?
Well, obviously very important. You know, we've gotten off to a good start outside of conference, much better than we have the past few years. And obviously setting the tone for the conference was important. Tough first game. You know, the first two games were really hard-fought games. I mean, it felt like you're almost in tournament-type, you know, atmosphere. They just seemed like both teams were going back and forth, and pretty emotional games. The first one, obviously, to lose it the way we lost it, and we had a chance there at the end. Boy, we almost had two walk-offs back-to-back nights. Our guy hit one really regular, one deep to right field, but they caught it at the wall. And but I'm proud of our guys. We came back and battled on Saturday night and ended up hitting a walk-off two-run home run that won the game and turned out to be huge, because on Sunday we won the series.
Sure enough. And, I mean, Coach, is there anything better than a walk-off victory in baseball?
No, there isn't. There absolutely isn't. And, you know, the great thing about our sport is there's no clock, you know, there's no timetable. Game's never over until, you know, had two strikes on us there and two outs. The runner at first, and of course Freddie Zamora had an unbelievable weekend. He was named player of the week for the ACC, and well deserved. He played as good a weekend that I've seen him play, both offensively and defensively, and I'm very excited to see, you know, Freddie and what's in store for us and with him the next couple of years. But there's nothing like a walk-off home run.
I want to ask you more about Freddie in a moment, but you mentioned that yesterday, another hard-fought game. Yellow Jackets made it a bit nerve-wracking in the ninth, but you're able to close things out. Daniel Fetterman comes in and does that with a pair of strikeouts. What was it sounded like, you know, really early on this season, this was a great test for your group to face a Georgia Tech team that you'll see again down the road.
Well, it's a matchup that doesn't maybe work in our favor, and I'll tell you why. We've obviously swung the bat very well, and we're very happy about that. But we got quite a few lefties in our lineup, and we haven't faced many lefties. Not only have we not faced many lefties in the season, whether it be starters or guys out of the pen, I think told the guys the last lefty we faced coming into this weekend was Rutgers, our opening series. We hadn't faced any starters since then that are left-handed, and really not a lot out of the bullpen. And the fact that we don't have many lefties on our team. So our guys are not facing lefties in inner squads throughout the fall, throughout the spring. Really, the only lefties they're facing is JD and myself when we're throwing batting practice. And, of course, we have JP Gates and Jeremy Cook, Bailey Mantilla has been on the shelf a little bit, but he's coming back. But we just don't have a lot of lefties. So you get concerned when you match up against a team like Georgia Tech that had they'd had two starting lefties. And on the flip side, we have not faced many lineups that have had a lot of left-handed hitters. And we're, like I just said, we're heavy with the right-handed pitchers. So the matchup, you would say on paper, is, oh, boy, you know, it just doesn't seem like it would go in our favor. But I was happy to see, again, we got some left-handed hitters that it doesn't bother them facing left-handed pitching, which is a great thing to have. So certainly, you know, I'm happy with that, the fact that we were able to come out with a series win. There's still we've got to improve in some areas. I thought we did play better defensively, which is something that I've been concerned about. I feel like we've gone in the right direction there, and our bullpen has got to do a better job. There's no you know, call for us to be up 9-2 in the last inning and allow them to score four runs. That happened one other game this year when we were playing FIU. We were up 10-2, and we let them back in the game, and that's good. Very good teams or great teams don't let that happen, so we got to make sure we clean that up.
Gino DeMari, Miami Hurricanes head baseball coach, joining Hurricane Hotline here on this Monday night. I want to get back to Freddy Zamora. As you described, the best player in the series. He's hitting over 400 so far this season. What have you seen from him that's allowed him to build on his standout freshman season?
Well, you know, he stayed here this summer. He didn't go off and play summer ball, which you can kind of look at two different ways. But he did work out very hard. He wanted to lift with our strength coach, Brian Gabriel. Gabe has done an unbelievable job with him and getting him stronger. Of course, Coach Lopez is our hitting coach now, and I think a lot of credit should go to him, too, with all of our hitters. But Freddie, you know, you can just see, you know, Freddie from day one when he's played in Miami, I've always said this, he's just, the game comes very easy to him, which is the ultimate compliment, I think. He's never overwhelmed or overmatched by anybody, and that just tells you how talented he is. And I always feel like he's the best player on the field. Freddie's one hiccup might be, and has been in the past, is you know, in practice, is not maybe the best of practice players. But I will tell you, I've kind of seen the light, and don't ask me what has triggered it. But he has been excellent the last week or so of really focusing in practice, working hard, getting better. And I think I made a comment in the locker room after Sunday's game. If he keeps that up, I wouldn't be surprised he's the best shortstop in the country at the end of the year.
Yeah, well, the numbers speak for themselves so far. And, Coach, I mean, you had a 6-home-run series against Georgia Tech. The Canes now collectively have 23 home runs over 15 games in 2019. That will rank UM third in the ACC, but it also matches the 2018 season total after 15 games in 2019. You've done that. So you already mentioned Coach Lopez, but how do you explain this power surge?
Well, and I mentioned our strength coach. Those are the two big reasons. And then the third would be the players themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, look, we've emphasized the hitting is a key. We've always been known as an offensive school. I mean, we've had great players. If you look at a lot of our players have gone on to play in the big leagues, a lot of them are hitters. And we've always been very offensive, except for the last 2 years. And it's been very, very demoralizing. It's hurt us in so many ways. It's not exciting to watch. It hasn't been. It is now, but it hasn't been exciting to watch us play in the last 3 years. Certainly carried over to wins and losses. It just, you got to score runs in this game. And there's no doubt pitching and defense is so important, but you got to score runs. You've got to score runs, especially in college baseball. And our guys, we've made an emphasis to spend a lot more time on hitting. They do a lot of work on their own. You know, we're under a, you know, you only get so many hours in the NCAA with the rules they put on you. So our guys have got to take it upon themselves to do extra work, whether it's before practice, after practice, and, of course, with us coaches during the practice. And there's no doubt our guys are working a lot harder, are doing a lot of different things. I think we're thinking outside the box a little more than we ever have, which is Coach Lopes. And it's showing. It's showing. The hard work is paying off.
Miami Hurricanes head baseball coach Gino DeMari joining Hurricane Hotline here. And I want to congratulate you, Coach. A great 12-3 start to the season overall. And in fact, you set a new UM record for a first-year head coach with your 12th win in the first 15 games. You know, I've interviewed a number of coaches over the years in different sports. And I know that, you know, you're in the middle of the season. You don't really want to look at a mark like this. But what does the accomplishment signify, not just for you, but for the team and the way it's playing?
It doesn't signify anything for me.
Okay.
We're not even close to halfway to the halfway point. We got 56 games scheduled regular season, so we're not even near that. But it just signifies, you know what, we did emphasize getting off to a good start. We have not gotten off to good starts the last 2 years, whether it be in the ACC or just the regular season overall or midweek games. Bottom line, our overall record has not been very good the last 2 years, and it's been an emphasis, no doubt, setting the tone right out of the gate, and it just says that we're off to a good start, and it's something that we just can't, you know, you can't ever just start patting yourself on the back. That ain't going to work. It will not work in with us, and I'm sure it won't work in any sport. So we just got to keep getting after it, the things that we've done up to this point, and continue. My motto has been get better every day. We got to do that, and we got to be the best team at the end of the year. So therefore, we got to get better every day.
Good, yeah, I agree with you, and we'll leave it up to people like me to at least look at the numbers like that, Coach. Hey, speaking of the history of the program, certainly it was a special night on Friday with Jim Morris having his number retired prior to the game. What was the scene like for the ceremony for those who didn't make it down to the field?
Well, obviously it was very deserving, first of all. Coach Morris, obviously 25 years at Miami and then 12 at Georgia Tech. And so I think it was very fitting that you had the ceremony with us playing Georgia Tech. He had a number of people in, not only from Miami, but from Atlanta. I think what made it extra special is bringing back some of the, I think they had 7 of the retired numbers of players came back.
Oh, cool.
So some of the great players, and Mike Fiore and Doug Shields, Orlando Gonzalez, Charles Johnson, Coach Frazier's family was there to represent. So was Randy Guerra's family. So you had a number of people there and that throughout the first pitch there to, you know, represent the, we only got 11, now 12 retired numbers in this historic program of ours. And of course, 3 of them are coaches out of the 12, Coach Morris now being the third. And so I could just tell. I think he enjoyed the night as he should have, and it was very, very a touching night. He had a lot of people there to come back and support him. A lot of ex-players were there, and it was overall a great night. Would have made it an excellent night as us winning, but still, you got to think it was a great night for him.
Yes, to be sure. And how closely do you still keep in touch with Coach Morris? I know he's still here locally and he's retired, but how often are you in touch with him?
Pretty much on a weekly basis. I mean, he texts me after the series to congratulate me, and he was up in the, you know, he was obviously Friday. He was at every game. He was at every game. He's got seats right behind home plate. Obviously, they had a big, ceremony, you know, Friday, and then they had the whole VIP box with all the people they had in town for his ceremony. And then Saturday, he's got his seats behind. And he called me, asked me on Sunday, because it can get a little warm out there on Sunday games, if he could sit up and, you know, his old box, which is mine now. And I said, of course, because my family's up there now. And so he sat up there, and one of his best friends is Randy Carroll, who's a big supporter of Georgia Tech, who was in town, obviously, for the series. So he was with him all weekend. But he talks to me on a weekly basis. He's very involved. He's watching all the games and keeping up with the team. And Coach cares about this program as much as anybody. So it's great, obviously, for me to have worked with him for so many years to have him kind of right there, you know.
For sure. That's great to hear. Miami Hurricanes head baseball coach Gino DeMari joining us here on Hurricane Hotline. And you've been part of the program for so long with Coach Morris and, you know, back as a player as well. Has stepping in as the head coach at the University of Miami been everything you've expected so far?
I don't know. Yes, it has. It's been it's strange. It's very strange, you know, because as a player, of course, I never thought of being a coach. Then you coach for 20 years and you think maybe, yeah, okay. And then you realize, okay, you're going to get an opportunity here in a few years to be a head coach. And, but like opening night, I know a lot of people ask, I don't know if this sounds right, but it felt normal. It just felt very normal to me. Wasn't very overwhelmed by anything. I don't know any assistant should be prepared for this moment more than me. I've been doing this now for 20 years at a top-notch program, and I've been sitting right next to one of the all-time great coaches, so I should be as prepared as anybody for this. Certainly have a long way to go in where, you know, I want to be as a coach in our program, but I feel very comfortable where I'm at, and certainly, you know, where we're at, and so I'm not sure if I'm answering your question, but that's kind of where I stand with it.
No, yeah, that's great, and it all makes a lot of sense, and it's a cool story considering your time as a player and all the time you put into the program and deserving that you now have the opportunity to be running the program. So let's get back to the play on the field. You wrap up a 9-game homestand tomorrow and Wednesday with Jackson State in town and have the opportunity to finish this homestand with an 8-1 record. It would seem obvious, but how important is it to establish a home field advantage as this season goes along?
Well, it is. You know, our park is a very historical one, and in college baseball, for many years, is a very intimidating one. I know it as a player, and certainly for many years as a coach, we've probably lost a little bit of that factor. What we'll get it back is wins, and of course, by winning, you get crowds, and by getting the crowds, you create that atmosphere that, you know, we used to have that was, to me, one of the all-time great atmospheres of any college baseball venue. So I can kind of feel that vibe, to be honest with you, here in a short period of time. Certainly, these games against Georgia Tech and our first ACC opponent, you were starting to feel. But I even felt it on opening night in those first couple games there, too. So, no doubt, creating that home field advantage, winning at our place, which is what we need to do, is going to help do that. And, certainly finishing off, like you said, this stand here where we've been, we cannot look ahead. We cannot look ahead to the weekend and where we're going. We got to make sure we take care of business and do what we're supposed to do. That's when we need to win midweek games. We got to win our majority and our fair share of the midweek games, which we're off to a good start doing.
Yeah, and with that in mind, what are the challenges for the team and for you as a coach with the midweek games as compared to the weekend series?
Yeah, well, the biggest is maybe the crowd and the atmosphere. You're not going to have the crowds that you have on the weekends, so there's, you know, midweek games, we normally play them at 6 o'clock because the kids have class the next day. So we don't want them to keep them there too late at night. And so therefore, you know, that challenge of getting yourself self-motivating to be ready to play because you're not going to have, you know, a full stadium. And, I tell the guys, it's no different than the minor leagues. You're going to play a lot of games in the minor leagues. You're trying to make it to the big leagues. You better kick yourself in the butt because there's going to be a lot of places. A lot of times you play and the crowds aren't going to be very big. And at the end of the day, we should all have pride and try to be the best we can every day anyway. So I know it's my job and our coach's job to make sure our guys are ready to play. And I think our guys are. I really do. I feel like our players understand it. I don't, you know, I'm always going to try to make sure they're ready in my own way. But, you know, I really think our guys are in that mode now. And this didn't just happen overnight. This has been going on since August. They understand, what's at stake and you know, how important this program is to not just us, myself and them, but everybody. It's, this program matters, and it's certainly kind of become a mantra for us. And, so every game matters. Doesn't matter who we're playing. These midweek games, be honest, have kept us out of the NCAA tournament the last couple of years. Our midweek games, we've been terrible the last 2 years. And then if we just had above 500 record, we'd have been in the NCAA tournament, but we did not over the last 2 years. So that's something our guys understand very well.
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, key games in the next couple of days against Jackson State. I did want to mention to our audience out there, you hit the road this weekend for some ACC action in Chapel Hill against North Carolina, a team that's highly ranked. Does your approach change as a coach in any way when you take your team on the road, especially in conference? And if so, how?
No, not really. I mean, no, it doesn't. You're not changing the way you play the game. Absolutely not. You know, what changes maybe is just how you're thinking about matching things up in terms of what their strengths and weaknesses are and yours as well, and trying to figure out matchups in terms of your lineup, matchups in terms of who's going to pitch in turn, you know, throughout the game out of the bullpen and how you want to match that up. And that's something we'll do when we get to Thursday and we fly up there and start breaking down, you know, video and film on those guys. But I haven't even looked at North Carolina. I do understand they had a tough weekend. They got swept at Clemson, which just means that they're going to be looking to bounce back and get it going again. So, so that's fine. But we got to just worry about Jackson State right now.
Well, Coach, congratulations on the strong start to the season. I hope you keep it up over the next couple of days because that's what you're focused on, Jackson State. So we'll leave it at that. I'm not going to wish you luck for North Carolina because I even haven't thought that far ahead based on what you said. So I appreciate your time this evening, and good luck the rest of this week with the schedule ahead.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me. Have a good night.
Yes, you too. There he is, Gino DeMari, Miami Hurricanes head baseball coach, joining us here on Hurricane Hotline. Off to the 12-3 start this season, as that's a new UM record for a first-year head coach in the first 15 games, 12 wins in those 15 games. So a great start so far, but as you heard him say, got to take care of business in these midweek games. Jackson State in town the next 2 days, and then they face off against North Carolina and Chapel Hill coming up this weekend. All right, we got much more to get into as the hour progresses. Coming up a little bit later this hour, you're going to hear from Miami Hurricanes women's basketball coach Katie Meyer. Coming up next, though, we're looking forward to talking to head men's tennis coach Alosha Peerich. As man, what an exciting victory yesterday for the tennis team, sweeping Florida State. We'll tell you about the significance of that and speak with Coach Peerich next here as Hurricane Hotline rolls on.
This is Hurricane Hotline on AM 560 and 96.5 HD2 WQAM. Driven by Williamson Cadillac. For value, style, and performance, visit Miami's premier luxury dealership. Click WilliamsonCadillac.com. Now, back to Don Bailey Jr. and the voice of the Canes, Joe Zagacki.
Welcome back to Hurricane Hotline. Greg Likens filling in for Joe Z and Don Bailey Jr. as Joe Zagacki and Charlotte getting ready to call the Miami Hurricanes men's basketball team's first-round contest in the ACC tournament. They face off against Wake Forest tomorrow at noon, and you can listen to all the action right here on 560 WQAM. Right now, though, we're going to talk some Miami Hurricanes tennis, as we're pleased to have Miami Hurricanes men's tennis coach join the program, Alosha Peerich. Coach, thanks for joining the program. How's everything going this evening?
Going well. Thank you guys for having me.
Yes, it's great to have you on. I want to start by congratulating you and your team on the sweep of Florida State yesterday, the first sweep of the Seminoles for the men's tennis team since 2006. It's always great to beat FSU if you're a Miami fan or part of the program. What were the keys to the victory yesterday?
It's always nice to beat FSU. Any sport we play them, it's always a good thing. And for our guys yesterday, the key was just showing up and fighting collectively as a group and competing really, really well. And that's what we did. Our guys competed really hard. They knew the importance of the match. They knew that they could beat FSU this year. And we just all showed up. All our guys showed up, and they really competed well, and they took care of it. So I was happy for them, happy for our program.
Yes, for sure. And, you know, a lot of is made of the rivalry in all the sports. Do you sense the same thing as far as intensity when the programs meet on the tennis court?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's all our guys, obviously. You know, football, I mean, we all know what football is here. And, it drives it, and we understand it. But our guys through that rivalry, I mean, they developed it their own. And I think Florida State is our biggest rival in any sport. So beating them in any sport, tennis included, is a huge deal for the program and for our student athletes.
Well, the win yesterday, the record now at 9-4, 3-0 in the ACC. You're ranked number 43 in the ITA and have been ranked as high as number 29 so far this season. Best start in conference play since 2011 when the team also opened up 3-0. I know you always want to win, but as a team, does the approach change at all in conference matchups, and does the magnitude change for you?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, it's obviously we know the other conference teams really well. ACC happens to be the in my opinion, the best conference in the country for tennis. So every match is very, very tough. There's no easy matches, and you know, every time you go out there, it's if you don't show up and you don't have your boxing gloves on, so to speak, I mean, it's going to be a tough day. So we understand the difficulty of every match. I mean, our guys have kind of stepped up this season in just sort of preparation and expectation of what we can do as a team, and they've done a great job so far. I mean, we'll see where we go. We got a couple of tough matches, non-conference matches this tomorrow, and then we host Notre Dame here on campus on Friday. So we're excited. I mean, we got a good start, but long way to go.
Alosha Peerich, Miami Hurricanes men's tennis coach, joining us here on Hurricanes Hotline. And you mentioned the games and matches coming up. You're playing 5 home games over the next 6 days, opening tomorrow with a doubleheader against UNC Wilmington at 11 a.m., Boston University at 4 p.m. How challenging as a coach when you're devising strategy are the doubleheaders from that standpoint?
It's doubleheaders is something that we do just, you know, for the sake of really giving a lot of guys opportunity to play. That's kind of the strategy in that. When we have a team that's as deep as ours, it gives us an opportunity to try some other guys in different matchups and different matches. Typically, we do about three of those a year. It's not something that we do, you know, on regular basis, but it just gives us an opportunity to try some of our other guys that haven't had a chance to be in a competitive setting. So, they're tough physically, especially down here in the heat. But our guys are, you know, our guys are prepared and in shape, and we'll just have to wait and see what happens tomorrow. But we'll give a couple of our different guys a look and opportunity tomorrow for sure.
Yes, terrific opportunity for everybody on the roster. And you mentioned it, but what kind of advantage does your team have in the heat and humidity that we're accustomed to here in South Florida, but that your opponents, especially if they're coming from up north, perhaps it's a rude awakening for them?
It's awesome. It really is. It's a home court advantage for sure. We're playing, you know, as I said, we're playing Notre Dame on Friday. They've probably played maybe one, maybe two matches outside all year. They're an indoor school. So coming down here into the humidity and, you know, 90 degree weather, it's an adjustment. So, on the flip side of that, when we travel up north, it's an adjustment for us to go indoors and handle those conditions. So, playing down here is definitely a home court advantage for us. We love it. Our guys love it. And, we want to have as many matches down here as possible. So, especially, tough conference matches.
For sure. Yeah. You mentioned Notre Dame coming in on Friday. They ranked 13th in the rankings, and that matchup is at 1 p.m. Given that impressive ranking and knowing what you guys are trying to accomplish this year, what's your outlook on that matchup?
It's any match is, you know, the way we tell our guys, I mean, every match we play is a winnable match. I mean, there's our roster is deep enough, our guys are good enough. It's matter of coming out prepared to face adversity and deal with things that come up and just work through problems of the match. And when you have six guys in singles do that and three doubles teams do that, then you have a chance against anybody. I mean, especially down here. So, we got to take care of business tomorrow. We got to play UNC, Wilmington, and BU. But we got to take care of that. But we're excited to play them and then see what happens on Friday. I mean, I think every match is a winnable match.
Yeah, and I want to let everybody know, for those interested in tuning in to some of your matches on the ACC Network, you can watch the Notre Dame match on matches on Friday on ACC Network Extra, and also Boston College on Sunday as well. So just to let everybody know that wants to tune in. And Coach, by the way, Alosha Pirich, the Miami Hurricanes men's tennis coach, joining us here on Hurricane Hotline. You're in your third season now at the helm of the men's tennis team at Miami. In what ways have you seen growth within the program since you've been in charge?
I think we've changed. We're able to change. You know, everybody talks about culture, and that's been the first thing that we had to change. And we've done that. I think we have a different culture than what I've inherited when we got here. We have the guys. We recruited the guys that love the sport, that want to be at the U. And it's absolutely one of those things where the guys are working hard, you know, and they really want to go out and represent the U in the best possible way. So the culture has changed tremendously. And I think with that, we're starting to see a little bit of results as well follow that. But, we've got good kids on our roster, and guys that really love to be here, love to play the game. And, they're very young, young group, and a lot of possibilities and opportunities ahead. So I can't wait to see what these guys can accomplish in the next couple of years.
I know last year, Coach, you led the team to the NCAA tournament for the first time since 2011. You won in the first round. Is that the goal once again for this season? And how would you assess the team's progress towards that goal so far?
Yeah, I mean, being here, that's always my goal every year. I mean, NCAA tournament is something that we strive for. Obviously, we want to go as deep as we possibly can in the tournament. You know, this year we're kind of on the similar path like we were last year. Maybe our record is a little bit better. Obviously, our ACC record is a little bit better. So, you know, a lot of matches to go. Obviously, you know, a lot of opportunities still ahead of us. I mean, I think we have a realistic chance of doing it again. And you know, and then at that point, you just don't know. You know, depends on a draw, depends on a lot of different factors how deep you can go. But yeah, for sure, this group. I mean, our goal is the NCAA tournament, and then see what we can do in it. But as I said, in you know, the it's a young roster. These guys are going to be together for a couple of more years after this, and I think they can do some really cool things down the road.
Yes, and yeah, looking at your roster, I mean, you got quite the international flavor on this roster. You got players from Argentina, yeah. Spain, Canada, Macedonia, Japan, the United States. You're from Bosnia and Herzegovina originally, so, I mean, it goes to show. I mean, tennis truly is a real international sport, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's. I would argue, it's, you know, you have, you know, soccer and tennis, and tennis is up there as far as the, you know, global impact. I mean, everywhere you go, tennis is played, and it's, you know, if you look at South America, Europe, I mean, it's probably top three popular sports in those in Europe and South America. So Asia also, it's picking up, and there's a lot of interest there in tennis, and you know, so yeah, our recruiting job is really spread out all over the world, and when we recruit guys, we recruit everywhere. You know, it's to get the best kids, you gotta go. You know, like you just said, I mean, you got to go pretty much all over the place to just find them. So that's what we do. We travel a lot. We, you know, we scout these guys all over the world, and we look for the best ones we can get. But it is absolutely a global sport for sure.
Well, Coach, I want to remind everybody you're playing 5 home games over the next 6 days. Tomorrow you got a doubleheader against UNC Wilmington at 11, Boston University at 4, Notre Dame coming to town on Friday at 1 o'clock, and you've got Boston College on Sunday as well as UConn at 6 o'clock and 2 o'clock, those games respectively. Good luck coming up this week. Congrats on the strong start so far, and appreciate you joining Hurricane Hotline tonight.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yes, there he is. Alosha Peric, Miami Hurricanes men's tennis coach, joining the program. We're not done yet. We've got another great interview coming up next. Our own Danny Rabinowitz had the opportunity to sit down with Katie Meyer, the Miami Hurricanes women's head basketball coach. You're going to hear that coming up next here on Hurricane Hotline.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.